kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
Hi, Joe. I feel better.
You feel better?
I still sound a little rough around the edges, but I feel better.
Yeah, you sound a lot better.
I sounded like shit last week. Let's go ahead and tear the Band-Aid off and be honest about it.
Yeah, it was kind of rough. But hey, you made it through. You're surviving.
I didn't
Things
die.
Are good.
Uh-huh. And we're not alone.
No, we're not. We have company today. Joining us from Other Tales Interactive, we have Mira and Tanya. How are you two doing today?
Doing really well, thank you.
Yeah, hi. It's pretty good day today.
Good day to set off fireworks?
Yes, yeah. We just had some wonderful fireworks outside. Like, a lot of sparkles.
So if there's an encore of fireworks and loud noises in the background, we know what's going on. There's no danger. It's just fireworks.
Yes.
My neighbors didn't pick up and move to y'all's country to sit outside your window while we record a podcast.
Oh, so you two are here to talk about your game, TikTok, A Tale for Two. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What is TikTok?
So, do you want to go, Mira, or should I?
You can go.
All right. TikTok, A Tale for Two is a two-player co-op adventure game where you have to work together and talk a lot with each other in order to solve puzzles and also to figure out the story together. So, if you've ever tried like an escape room, it functions a little bit like that, where you see different things and, yeah, just kind of have to try to work together to progress. That was a pitch.
Now, Cole and I, we played this game. We spent, as the game put it, we wasted 25 minutes of our lives.
Yes.
Which I love that the game said that. That was hilarious, by the way.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, we have some mixed reactions to that one. it's funny because usually, when you play games, you usually win. Like, you win when you're done, but this one, I think he says, like, lost, you've lost something.
And
you're like,
I thought we did something wrong, and that we needed to go back, and Joe's like, nope, that's that. And I'm like, what?
Well, it's just like, the beta version for now, right?
Exactly. So that ending will also make some more sense once you play the full game, but it's fun to see people's reaction to it already, just kind of testing it out a little bit.
Well, you certainly got a good reaction out of us.
That's good.
I was like, what did we click wrong? We solved the puzzle. I was so proud of us because you have no idea how difficult it was for me and Joe to get through this.
we'd love to hear more. Yeah. How do you usually play co-op games together?
We don't.
Sometimes. Every now and then we'll get together and play something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's usually not something where you have to communicate so carefully. In your game you have to describe the scenes to each other. You have different views. You're playing a game, most of the stuff we play is usually versus in some way, or even if it is co-op, it's like one of you can go off and do your own thing and the other goes off and does theirs. You don't really have to come together and put the puzzles together like that. So it was definitely a way to play a game with Joe that I wasn't used to.
Yeah, most of the time we play a game together, it's Joe, stay here, let me shoot everything, then you can come up.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you made it through.
Yeah.
And the urge to take over and just be like, let me solve all the puzzles, was there.
Yeah.
And then I was like, son of a bitch, where's the rest of the puzzle piece?
Yeah, this is very hard.
It got to one point where we had to use Skype to share the screen so I could see because I he was trying to describe one of the puzzle solutions, and it was throwing me off the way we were describing it back and forth. And then as soon as he showed me the screen, I was like, oh, yeah, derp.
I cheated and showed her the train ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's cool. It's a good way to, like, it's kind of like a hint system. Mm-hmm. Like, we start showing each other things, then that works.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good that we made it all that way without having to do that.
Right. It's cool because if you play it on like your tablet or phone, then it's a lot easier to kind of just grab someone else's. If you grab someone else's things, you'd be like, okay, let me do that thing. So that was cool that you played it on computers then.
Yeah, we actually... Good for you guys. We're a good ways apart, so... So we played it over Skype and... It went really well.
Nice.
It didn't. It was fun, too.
Mm-hmm. It really was.
So I'm curious to know, what made you want to design a game that requires two completely separate screens and experiences and forces people to have to actually talk out problems and work together?
I think we started actually making this game as part of our master thesis at university. And we were like, we wanted to... just try to figure out how to make a story for two people. And also, we've been playing a lot of story games ourselves, but if we have one tablet or one computer, and me and Tanya would play it together. And then we kind of just like taking turns on like touching the keyboard or the mouse, just trying to be the ones who are in control a little bit. So then we were like, but we need to make something that both people can press stuff at the same time and kind of be invested and have some agency in it in themselves.
Mm. Yeah.
So is it kind of like developing two games at one time?
It basically is. As well, or it's like part of it is because, or at least technical side of it, that you're kind of making, it feels like you're making two completely different versions of the same game. But then design-wise and writing and everything, it's so intertwined, I think.
Yes, same. Like writing and designing is pretty intertwined. And then, also the art is also, of course, different, some places where it needs to be two different things that you see. So that's also kind of like making at least two different worlds.
Yeah, like time-wise. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's always games. Like, oh, now I finished like half of this puzzle at least.
And what was the thought process behind just wanting to focus on a cooperative experience?
It was kind of a good research question because we didn't see a lot of stuff that was both story driven and that you could work together at the same time. Like, we saw that there were different things where it was like you have to be fast or you have to shoot something, or like there was a lot of these things where you could cooperate. But it was more in an action kind of mode. And then we thought, what if we would just want to make like a calm experience as well? There is also together. And I think we were just kind of curious, and then it just took us where we ended up in a way. Do you want to add something, Mira?
Yeah, or also because we were kind of inspired by our parents reading books out loud to us when we were kids. And that kind of is also part of the thing that we wanted to... It's like we don't do that much as adults. We don't read stories to each other. We don't talk about stories unless you're in a book club, and that would probably be awesome. I'm not in one, but I probably should. But that thing where you just discuss something that's happening and you kind of have to talk to each other about it, it felt like something really exciting and new to us.
Yeah.
You said it was part of a master thesis program, you said?
Mm-hmm.
What course were you in?
We were in a course in game design at the IT University in Denmark, where we met each other for the first time. And then we were writing our thesis together on this question, and we kind of made this prototype of TikTok. And then while we were also studying, we sent it into an incubator in Sweden, and we got in, and then... We basically just graduated, went to the incubator, and then when we got home, we're like, let's start a company, let's make the game. And then it just kind of rolled from there.
What kind of time frame was that? Was it over the span of like a couple of years, a couple of months?
We have been developing the game now for almost 3 years. So about 3 years ago, we started our thesis. And then, yeah, we've done a lot of stuff on the way. Yeah.
Are there other people involved in the development of the game, or is it just you two?
There's also two more people working with us right now. So we have a sound designer who makes awesome sounds where it's like, this. We just implemented yesterday, where if you're in a specific place at a specific time, you would hear it differently than if you were there in the morning or at night. So just little small cool things that you can do. And then we also have a graphics programmer and animator who works with us as well. So okay. we worked for, I'm really bad at estimating time, but I'm thinking we worked on the game by ourselves for a year or something, Tanya?
Yeah, probably. Yes. Yeah.
Time and space. and then we got to working with these other two people, and it's been really nice to see how it just goes a lot faster. And we're also like learning how to make games when we started. So the first time we've been making games was at the university where we did the game design. Before we come from like literature, where we did creative writing and study literature. Like, what did you do? Comparative literature?
Yeah, I think that's the translation.
Yeah, like most of the time we also spent like Googling, how do I code this? How do I draw this? Things like that. So like next game, I think it will take shorter time.
So it's just been a learning process the whole time.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Also, like, just trying to find like other games that do what we do. We haven't found anything yet that is like that is the same. So it's also hard to be. You can't look at something else and see like, what did they do with this? Because you have to kind of come up with this thing on your own as well.
So is this the beginning of a new genre of game?
I hope so.
It could be. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we've been talking about it. Like, we really want it to be, because then we can play them. Like, if someone else does it, then we can play them ourselves.
So you're doing this just to make other people create games that you want to play, basically.
Yes, that's the plan.
It's really a brilliant idea.
Yep. It's like, it's the longest plan we've ever done. 3 years. It's like, wow. Yeah. But it's cool. We've seen some new, right? I think, the latest one, A Way Out, that we could play. That's awesome. It feels like they're taking this like two-player only thing. There's some things that are happening, at least.
Yes. That leads me to one of the questions that I had. With A Way Out, since it had to be played cooperatively, when you purchased the game, you were able to invite a friend to play with you that without them purchasing the game as well. How will that work in TikTok?
Yeah, that's such a smart thing that they're
doing. Yeah, it's really smart.
Because we're releasing the game on so many different platforms that we're going to try to find a way. We're still working on that now. We're going to try to find a way where we can do something similar on all, which is also why it takes a bit longer to kind of settle on something, because we're just investigating different possibilities right now.
Yeah.
What all devices are you releasing on?
We're going to be on PC and Mac, and then on the Play Store, so like phones, Android phones, and the App Store, so all the iOS devices, and then also Nintendo Switch.
Switch feels like the perfect place for this game. It really does.
Will it use touch controls on the Switch?
Sorry, say it again?
Will it use touch control on the Switch?
Yes, so that will happen. We'll also, if all goes well, implement a controller. We will do that. See how long.
Yeah, the Switch feels perfect for this game. It really does.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. Also, being on the Nintendo platform. It's such a nice console.
Definitely. How did you guys get to working with Nintendo on this?
We actually met them at GDC like 2 years ago in San Francisco, and we talked to them about the game there, and they seemed like, oh, maybe this could be something cool, maybe the next game you're working on will be something interesting. And then we met them again a year after, and then it's kind of like the first time we met them, we felt like we just graduated, and the game felt like we just graduated. And then we spent another year on it, and we were like, okay, we can show that we can actually do what we say if that makes sense, yeah, we can deliver.
Yes.
And then they're really excited.
It's amazing the amount of time it can take to polish something.
Absolutely.
Yes, sure.
Like, coming up with the idea is easy, but actually implementing it is what takes forever.
Yes.
We learned that now.
So with being on various devices and with crossplay enabled, do you have any hopes of coming to Xbox or PlayStation in the future? Or do you want me to just hush and be like, let me get through the Steam release first?
I think it's a good question. And if all goes well, then I think we'd love to do all platforms everywhere.
Yes. So
there might be new things come up before we're done as well. And then we're like, yes, we want to be there and there. So
PSVR.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, I can only imagine this game in VR. Holy shit.
I think it'd be pretty awesome with the words floating in the air in front of you. Oh.
Yeah.
You guys are welcome.
Very much. Great idea.
Yeah. I'm wondering how we feel like spinning in the world in VR.
Emotion.
Yeah.
Very true. Mm-hmm.
That'd be funny.
They're like, can we just focus on finishing on Steam and Nintendo and phones first before you start throwing more platforms at us?
Yeah,
no. This is what I do. I make it rain. Oh, you're not on Xbox? Hold still.
No, it would definitely be very cool as well. Like, what is your best platform to play anything on? Or like, what do you prefer playing on, the two of you?
We're Xbox fans.
Okay, cool. Mm. That's where the question comes from. Nice.
It was funny because I just recently bought a computer that could handle playing games. My other one, like, if you even looked at the Steam button on it, it would just implode. And so my Christmas present was a slightly upgraded computer. Yeah. And, like, the guy that had it for sale, he was like, it plays Fortnite. And I was like, I don't want to play Fortnite. But your game was actually the maiden game to be launched on it once I got it home and to test it out. So it was the first game we played. And it didn't implode, and I was so happy.
Glad to hear.
So we mentioned earlier that the two of us spent 25, 26 minutes, something like that, playing through the game. How long is the full experience going to be?
That's also a very good question. So there will be, like, it depends a little bit. I think, like, for example, this beta, we have seen people play it from 20 minutes up to like 50 minutes or something like that. So, like, a chapter. Minutes,
they must suck at the game.
So it takes, like,
invested in the story and in validating every word.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, there will be 3 chapters in total, and then the other 2 will take a bit longer than the first one. So yeah, so I guess for you guys it would be around an hour and a half, 2 hours.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're kind of seeing it like in an escape. Had you been to a real life escape room, any of you?
No, my daughter's done them a couple of times, but I have not.
Those are interesting because there's like, it's like usually an hour, you have an hour to get out or something. Mm-hmm. And then if you play it faster, it just means you're smarter. So it's like that with our game as well, we feel. Like some people just breeze through it. We're like, what? What happened? How smart are people? And then some just take longer. And in either way, it's fine as long as you're having fun too.
I was going to ask, because usually when we do these interviews, I go combing the internet to see if anybody's asked questions about the game that haven't been answered. And one of them that I actually come across was whether or not there were going to be timed puzzles, or if you could turn them off if there were, or if it was just all going to be take it at your leisure.
Same way, we have like one puzzle where you kind of need to be a little fast.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to give too much away.
Very little.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
With a snippet of an answer. We're good with that. I feel like I did my job.
Cool.
so proud of you asking questions.
I do things. Best co-host ever. With you guys being in open beta now, have you seen people playing the game in a way you didn't expect?
Yeah, there's the speed runs, which we did not expect at all.
Already?
There's like people who, like, but they play it multiple times. They start playing it and then like, oh, let's speed run it. And then it doesn't go as fast as anticipated. So maybe they do it half the time. And then they figure out, oh, if we do this, then we can do it even faster. And then some people can actually play the beta in 2 minutes.
Wow.
That's insanity.
Yeah, it's really fast. Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's also fun because they usually, first, you can kind of pick a player. You either pick player one or player two, and then you just see that side of the game. So what people have done, there's several people who have done that speedrun thing, and then they just swap player, but they think it's going to be as fast, but then they're kind of realizing, oh, but they didn't see what the other person saw, this, so they didn't know how to interact with things, or they're not connecting it in the same way. And then they don't talk about it as much because they just want to speedrun it, right?
So yeah.
That's also been cool to see that you can replay it a little bit.
are the puzzles always the same or will they change?
We think that at least they will change now just from the beta. But other than that, they're going to stay the same. There's some that might be a little random, but the fact that we don't have networking means that we kind of have to keep it the same in a way. Meant like as watching a movie, once you played it once, you kind of know.
Yeah.
We play it again to find the little details that you might have missed.
You mentioned there's going to be 3 chapters in the game. Is there going to be like a chapter select for the people who can't do it all in one playthrough?
There's definitely going to be a save. So you can like late game and then come back to it. I was still also thinking about, is there going to be a chapter select or not? I don't know. You probably know more about that, Mira, actually. Yeah, you're on the tech.
Thank you, decision-wise. But I think that we'll, at least once you played it through once, so you get to choose for sure. But we're thinking that, it's also interesting, right? Because it depends on if you're playing with different people and stuff as well. You might have already played level 1 and want to go to level 2 or 3. I think it will just be, if you played it once, then you didn't save that, then you get to choose.
That's good. So, Tanya mentioned that you're on the tech side, Mira. What are your individual jobs with the game? What do you do? What do you focus on?
Yep. So, we both do writing and designing. We do all of that together. And then I, Mira, do all the programming. So, puzzle programming, gameplay programming. And then Tanya does...
Yeah, do all the art and the graphics in the game. And then also collaborate together with Andy, our animator as well, for making effects. And he also makes a lot of the 3D that I didn't texture.
Gotcha. So you find ways to keep busy, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's just the side of also running a company. That takes time. We do.
Yeah.
That.
Yes.
What challenges have you run into with running a business that you never would have expected?
Accounting. You have to write everything up. It's good. No, we're doing it properly now, but it feels like we did like all the mistakes you could, but from the start, because you have to learn about like VAT and was ATP? Is that a
Like pension? Yeah.
Yeah. Things so that you have to learn how it works.
Yeah. And then just like general time management, I think that surprised me as well. Like it's so easy to just do company stuff and then suddenly you have worked 1 week on the company and not on the game.
I find that as a creative person, that just generally comes with the course too. Like you're like, I have no time management skills because I either need to paint or budget my checkbook and there's no in between.
Yeah, it's totally been like a steep learning curve for everything, but it's also a very fun part to learn that.
Very fun was in quotes there,
right? It's like, okay, I really like learning new things, and then some things are definitely more fun to learn than others. Yes.
like game development courses and degrees should come with a business degree as a double.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it would actually have been nice to have like a course in business. It could have been cool.
That's actually something that we were looking at. My oldest daughter is interested in becoming a game developer. Mm-hmm. And there is a college in our state that has a game development course, and they actually do work in the business courses with it. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised to see that. And I was like, I guess we figured out where you're going.
Yeah, but that's such a good idea. Like, just to prepare yourself that it's the job.
Yeah.
Like, in other ways, I think that's why I also got the surprise. I knew it was not just going to be all fun and games, but that it was also the reality is so different than what you can imagine in your head, I felt.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess it depends as well. Now we're also indies, right? So we have our own company and we're doing basically everything, right? So it's like many hats that you have to wear. But I guess if you're like in a AAA studio and you're an artist, then you probably mostly do art. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's clearly much easier to be.
No, but like, yeah, then there's other things with that. But
then there's the element of the boss that breathes down your neck because you put a pixel in the wrong spot. Not that that gets any better when it's indie development, because then you're the perfectionist that's mad about a pixel in the wrong spot.
Yes. Which also, that happens for sure. Yes.
Speaking of the pixels, you guys have a pretty distinct art style going on with the game. What was the inspiration behind that?
It was, like, it started with being Song of the Sea. Do you know that movie?
I'm not familiar with it.
Is there not a book and a game, Song of the Sea, as well?
Song of the Deep.
Song of the Deep. That's where I got mixed up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Song of the Sea.
I googled it. I'm good.
Cool. Yeah, it's just like animated film for kids, but they have like beautiful watercolor textures and beautiful line work and stuff like that. And in the beginning, we thought that's really cool, and we were especially in love with like watercolor texture and a bit like hand painted style. So I think we're kind of like, okay, what can we do if we go in that direction? And then it kind of developed itself as well, where we're kind of, I learned new things, and then the art style changed a little bit, and then I learned another thing, and it changed a little bit again. Yes, but we have kind of stayed true to like watercolor and almost like this cut out feel. We wanted it to feel like handmade, because also the world is a created world. It's not just the reality. So that kind of fitted.
Yeah, it fits the narrative in a sense as well.
Yeah.
I had never seen this movie, but I'm sitting here looking at the screenshots of it, and I definitely see where you guys were inspired by it.
Yeah,
it's absolutely gorgeous.
It's an amazing movie as well. It's totally worth a watch.
I wonder if it ever released in America, because I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, yeah, maybe it's from somewhere in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
It's like still
something
called like Book of Kells or something, which is similar and it's really cool. I have to look it up.
It was an international co-production from Ireland, Belgium, Denmark, France, and Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. So it says Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know.
No, I didn't know that either.
Google.
Yeah, it looks beautiful though.
Yeah,
it's super pretty.
Well, I'm writing that down. That'll be on my list of things to do. Try to find that movie.
Perfect.
So, when the two of you are testing out the game, who's player one and who's player two?
It changes a bit. Today, I was player one.
Yeah. I wonder, it felt like we were thinking something from the start, or we made it up. Were you player one always, like, in our heart?
No, I don't think so. Because I think, like, in the beginning, we were also talking about that one person would write one side and the other person would write the other side.
Yeah.
And I think there you were actually on the player one side.
Ah, cool. Yeah, because there's, like, two characters in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so you learn more about both of them once you play the full game. Because right now we just get a little bit of it. But then we were like trying to find out who was who for us. They're very different from us, but still there was something for similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're kind of like in the beginning, we didn't know how to divide up all the tasks and stuff like that. And we were thinking, oh, maybe it actually is smarter if like Mira takes one person and I take another person and then we just write it. But then the game kind of changed a little bit as well. And now we're doing most of the writing together. Yeah.
In what ways did the game change?
I think just also the way the story was told or from what perspective the story was told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right now, so now it's just the one character's kind of recollection or of the events that happened. So then it was then was hard to do like at least a clean split of who writes what character.
That's pretty cool. It's been in development for about 3 years now. It is releasing. Is there a firm release date for it, or is it still just Q1 2019?
Still just that. Yeah. So. Beginning of next year.
Soon.
We'll have to pick it.
Soon.
Is it exciting that the finish line is in sight, that you're almost done?
It's so cool. I'm so scary.
Yes. It's very exciting. It's I'm really excited also to, like, how does it feel when it's out there in the world? Like, how are you going to react? Because this game has been our life for such a long time now that it's... That's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, who are we without it?
Yeah.
What's the reception been to the beta so far?
Really good. Yeah. Really nice. It's been really fun watching a lot of the streams of people playing the game and having fun with it. And yeah.
And
do you want to add?
To some extent, we've been showing it to people that we know or to people that we meet at different festivals or conventions. And this feels like the first time is a bit more removed from us. And to still see that people are enjoying it, that's really calming and exciting.
Mm. Yes. And that people make it through the beta, that's also great. They only lose some minutes, but yeah.
I still love how it popped up that we wasted 25 minutes of our life.
Yeah.
That was such a great ending to the demo of the game.
Yeah.
My husband afterwards, he's like, so how'd it go? I was like, well, we wasted 25 minutes.
Yeah. it's really fun to watch people play it because you're a bit nervous to how they will react. Like, I've been seeing a lot of the streams and then you're just like, oh, I hope they are a little bit happy at the end of this. But it's great to hear the different reactions as well. I think that's been awesome.
I remember emailing Simon after we finished playing it, and I said, yeah, the game said we wasted 25 minutes of our life. I can't wait to talk about it. And I'm just worried that he took it the wrong way. It's like, oh, they must not have really liked the game if he said it that way.
That's great.
That's awesome. But it's cool because also it's like totally up to the players to feel what they feel about that as well. I kind of like it. It's just, it does say not the most positive end message you could get, but it's still some people feel it as an accomplishment as well anyway, and that's been cool.
Have there been any kind of really, really cool or strange reactions that you've seen of people live streaming the game?
I like when people get a little bit scared. Like, we have a couple that posted in our a couple of streamers that posted where one person, now I'm not gonna say the moment, but one person gets afraid at a specific moment and like jumps a little bit in his seat, and then the other streamer also gets scared because that person gets scared. It's like, that was really cool. Did you see it, Mira?
In the Discord?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they weren't even, I don't think they were playing with each other.
They were not? They both got scared. They were playing with each other.
No, but they were playing the different players. But they were, like, one person put up theirs because they got scared of their friend playing. and got
All right, then I understand.
Like, what did it look like, the other side? And then it fits so well together. You could kind of, it would be really fun to actually put two streams together of them not playing with each other, but just like take player one and player two. I want to see how.
Just a random player one and a random player two.
Maybe it fits sometimes. Just pretend it was them. What else? And I watched two guys from Germany streaming the game, and that was really fun because they were playing it in German, and I didn't know what they were saying, but their reactions were so clear, and that was wonderful. Like, I could see what they were saying, or I could feel what they were saying. Anyway, and that was great.
That's fantastic.
Do you recommend the game be played close together, or do you feel like it's played better when it's played over a distance with somebody?
I think both are great. Mm-hmm. And it also, I think the most important is maybe just to, no, maybe you can also not say that. I was going to say, like, you should play it with someone you want to play it together with, but we're also set it up where you can actually play with a stranger. And I also think that's interesting to try to play this game with someone you don't know. But it also, some people write, for example, I have a partner that lives like in another country than me, and then they can actually play it together over Discord, and I think that's awesome. But it's also awesome to play it close to each other and be in the same room. Then, as we talked about, you can make hints easier and you can show each other each other's screen. And yeah, I think both ways are great.
Because I did play it over the computer with Joe, and I'm looking forward to like playing it in the house with my daughter.
Yeah,
we haven't done it yet because she busted her phone and Santa hasn't brought the new one yet. It's your new phone. I intend to download the beta for so that we can play it together.
Yeah.
Christmas. That's good.
That's cool. Then you have to tell us what you prefer as well to play. Yeah.
I have opinions all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, that would be great to hear.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I think people, like, the best way to play it is just how you would play it if you play a co-op game with someone. Like, what do you prefer? I think that's cool.
Yeah.
It allows you to play it however you want.
I have a feeling that playing with the daughter is going to outrank playing with Joe.
I want to see if we get through it quicker. That's what I'm curious about.
Well, you already know what you're doing.
Well, that's beside the point. She doesn't. How well do you think an almost 15-year-old's going to communicate with her mother?
True.
You should scream it. Either way, just for us. Otherwise, we record it for it. It would be great.
Just play it on Skype and have a camera on and just showing the two of you playing together. Oh. And they could just watch. It'll be like, it'll be a character study.
A character study.
We'll write a second thesis about this.
I would love if like you still haven't been graded on your thesis. It's been 3 years and you're still working on your thesis. You're just waiting for that final grade next year.
Yeah.
This one would be like, this is not a good idea. But we passed it, so I'm happy.
Yes.
Like, what is this great idea? Yeah.
So when you're not working on TikTok, what games are you enjoying right now? What are you playing?
I just tried a little bit of Subnautica, and yeah, that was really cool. I liked it.
Yeah, and I'm playing both, like, I play a lot of JRPGs, and I'm playing Persona 5 right now.
Nice.
Different from our game, but it's so good. Oh, I love it. And also, I just played a couple hours of this, how do you say it? The new, game from Devolver, the watercolor, also texture, right? Kind of, it's a 2D platformer. Do you know it?
I haven't played that one, no.
No, yeah, it's also really, really, really beautiful. And I was just so, like, sometimes you get stuck at looking at some things on, like, in a game, and I'm so obsessed over just when you jump, there's this, like, particle effect or, like, smoke that happens. So I've just been standing and jumping for.
What was the name of that one?
Greece. GRIS.
Oh, I don't think we got that on Xbox, do we?
No. I think it's okay. On Steam and on Switch, I think.
Or shit.
Hopefully it will come to you guys soon, too.
Hope so.
And what about you? What do you play mostly?
I play Rock Band. I like my Rock Band.
Then I really have to admit what I've been playing this whole week.
Yes, oh, let's hear it.
Pro Fishing Simulator.
Whoa, that's cool.
I don't know. I have a really weird quirk where I really like fishing simulators.
Oh, that's so nice.
And
so
do you play a lot of them.
So do you go out? Do you have like, I don't know the English word for this actually. Like, do you have like a fishing rod, or is it like you go on a boat and you have a giant net, or
how for do the you, games?
Yeah.
You have actual rods and you, yeah, you have to have the right kind of rod for the type of fish that you're trying to catch. And you have, you have to have the right kind of bait, and the weather conditions have to be right. And they go all out on simulator games. I like the Dovetail games better than the Pro Fishing Simulator one. It's had its quirks, but, yeah, you really have to, like, you have to cast out, and you have to have, the cast has to be powered just so, or it'll go too far and you get caught up in the weeds with your bait. And yeah,
cool.
It's very realistic. I wish I knew why I like them as well as I do. It's something like I don't like to admit to, because once I've got one of them, I will sit down and play it for like 4 days straight. And then be like, oh shit, I had review games.
I love fishing in Minecraft, but it's probably very different from an actual simulator game. Yeah.
I think part of it is because my husband and I used to fish a lot when we were younger, but I'm disabled now and I can't go. And so we play, like, the Dovetail fishing games have multiplayer, and he can be in the other room on one Xbox and I'm in here on the other Xbox, and we're fishing together, and it's just like I'm not fucked up. So
yeah.
Awesome. Do you feel
that's great.
Like, is it similar to real life? They do, or you said they do very real life?
Yeah, some of them do really good jobs. Like the Dovetail games, they go all out. You can spend 30 and 40 minutes fighting a big fish to try to reel it in on the Dovetail games. Pro Fishing Simulator is like, you get a bite and it reels in and it's done. But it's a little less enjoyable. But for the Dovetail games, like, I have sat in a multiplayer session and just fought for like half an hour to get a fish to reel in, because you have to tire it out, just like in real life.
Oh, that's crazy. That's so cool. Is there also, is there a VR version?
I don't know, because I don't have VR.
That would be, with your new computer.
Correct. Yeah. It's new to me. It was somebody else's cast off. The struggle is real when you are sold on the Facebook marketplace.
Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything you wanted to talk about the game that we didn't bring up?
That was a tough question.
The hardest one we asked.
Oh, yeah.
Because you do that now, Tanya, I think you're thinking about it, something. I was just, like, waiting for you to finish your thoughts. But I think, like, yeah, like, the what we would like to say now, so, is that if people just want to try it, we're still open, we still have keys for you all, if you want to try it out yourself and waste some time with us.
Yes.
And where can people get in touch with you and stay in touch with what you're doing?
The best way to get the keys for the beta is to join our Discord, which is like normal Discord/OtherTales. Or you can also just follow us on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, where we'll just post things as we go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it has been a pleasure having the two of you on chatting about the game. Just give us one more time the sales pitch on the game, where people can get it, where people can keep up to date with everything going on with the game. And I know it's not coming out until Q1. I always feel bad when we can't say, when is it coming out? What's the price going to be?
It will be there soon.
Dune TM.
I never know how to wrap up interviews when there's no date or price for the game yet.
Ah, yeah, what is the end? You can say it's Christmas. Denmark is Christmas on the 24th of December, in case anyone is interested. Because you have the day after.
Send presents.
Yep.
Oh, well, again, it has been a pleasure having the two of you on chatting. We're going to take a quick break with the show. We're going to be back with some more, with some reviews we got to take care of. Mira, Tanya, it's been a pleasure. Do either of you have any final words to wrap up the interview?
It's been really nice being here as well. It's been nice chatting with you.
And Merry Christmas. I'm obsessed with Christmas. It's like, oh, what has happened already? But yeah, just really, really awesome to have been here to chat with you both as well. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to Mira and Tanya for coming on, chatting about TikTok. Really, really cool game. Everyone's got to check that out next year when it releases. Lots more show to take care of. A lot of reviews we got to get through. We're starting things off like we usually do with Pernell Vaughn. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, even though the evil of the winter solstice is looming over our shoulders. And I'm also curious about this TikTok that you just mentioned that I missed out on by mere minutes.
You did. It is called TikTok, A Tale for Two. And are you familiar with puzzle adventure games like Artifacts Mundi?
Yes.
Imagine that split into two, where you have one half and your friend has the other half, and you have to work together to figure out the puzzles.
That's a lot of tease and a lot of good sounding gameplay there, actually. I like this. That sounds like a cool premise.
It's really, really cool. They had a beta come out, and Cole and I played through that and had a lot of fun with it. And the full game is coming out next year for Steam, for iOS, for Android, and for the Switch.
Oh, the Switch is getting those hits, boy. Whew. Which actually has me thinking about something. It reminded me of something interesting. So this is general opinion time, mind you, but I came across an article on Nintendo Life today. And it's the much maligned top game systems list. But in this case, they were all Nintendo consoles. They were rating every Nintendo system. And they put the Switch at number one.
Really?
Yes. Now, I like my Switch. I like my Switch a lot, actually. But I don't think, and I want your opinion on this as a second opinion, I don't think the Switch has had enough life in it to give it a number one above every other Nintendo console has tried and true. Sans the Virtual Boy. Because
the Virtual Boy is the obvious number one. We just have to be fair to everyone else and leave that one out.
That is true. The Virtual Boy is the dominant force of the system lineup there. But when we factor him out, I don't think the Switch is quite number one yet. It hasn't been, I mean, as great as the system is, I don't think it's been out long enough to really hit that point. So I'm curious, what would you say would be your number one? Well, first, what do you think about the Switch statement? And two, what would you say is your number one and possibly number two consoles? Because I have a feeling I know what your number one is going to be.
First off, does this include handhelds or just consoles?
Oh, of course it includes handhelds. It has to.
All right. Then the number one for me is the DS. Not the 3DS, but just the original DS. Just the game library between the DS and the Game Boy Advance. And the original Game Boy is so goddamn good and so huge that you can't go wrong with a DS.
See, what I just learned is, one, you're awesome and we have a lot in common here, because the DS is also my number one Nintendo system. One of the reasons for what you just said, but two, is the much often forgotten download play, which originated on the Nintendo DS,
yeah,
which is what allowed you to have multiplayer games going across, but only one of you needed to own the cart, which for someone like me who bought tons of games and his friends who bought nothing, that was wonderful. And it made so many of my games get life that they otherwise would not have gotten. So like, they're like, the Switch, like, no. Switch has nothing on the DS. I mean, the Switch is good, but I'm one of those people that's actually mourning the 3DS. Everybody else wants them to move on to the Switch. I'm like, no, give me more 3DS games. I'll take that around before I take the Switch if I can help it.
Yeah, but I think the DS is number one. Number two, I would have to go Super Nintendo.
See, we're good. See, this guy, man. We should have written this article, because number one and two, same two. I have a feeling it might taper off a bit after the second system, though. But I think our one and twos are exactly the same.
I don't know how I would rank the rest of them. The Switch is up there. I just think it's too early to call it number one, especially because they have jack shit in the way of virtual console. Like, I think the Wii would get bumped up higher because of the virtual console situation.
In my case, I wouldn't really know so much bringing the virtual console from a personal standpoint, only because while it does expand the system's library, it still ultimately results in it kind of banking off of previous generations' experience to get resold games. But at the same time, where I give the Switch a lot of credit that a lot of more recent Nintendo consoles has not had is they got their hands on third-party support again in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Wii... It's a weird statement, because someone would say, well, what about the Wii? There were tons of third-party games on the Wii. And while you weren't exactly incorrect there, most of that, from what I recall, was third-party shovelware garbage. Like, there wasn't a lot of gems, third-party gems. There were many of them. I'm not going to say there weren't any. I have a number of them upstairs. But as far as, like, sheer volume goes, the vast majority was, like, shovelware stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But basically the equivalent of, like, Barbie Horse Adventures Redux. But the Switch...
The Wii does still have a lot of good games available for it. It has the virtual console available to it, and it's got the GameCube library.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was backwards compatible with
the Cube. Yeah, baby. GameCube.
Which was nice, because that was when I sold my GameCube for years and then repurchased it down the line just so I would have a Crystal Chronicles portable, and then they announced freaking Crystal Chronicles on the Switch. But whatever. Point is, I repurchased it for a transportable Crystal Chronicles with 4 Game Boy Advances and 4 cables, and it was worth it. But, yeah, in that case, yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah, because it did have good games on it, and it had a lot of surprise ones for me, like Super Swing Golf and freaking Fortune Street. Games that a lot of people out there are probably like, ugh, why would you rank Fortune Street up there? I'm like, because it was fucking good. That's why I'd rank Fortune Street up there. That game was swank. It was like everything I hated about Monopoly got fixed by that game. Because, first of all, I know people are like, well, first of all, you should just hate Monopoly, period. And of course, I'm going to still say, fuck you, Double Time. Because Monopoly was a quality game before I learned about what big games were. But even when I was a kid, it always had specific flaws to it. Fortune Street fixed those flaws and let me do it with Mario. That was
worth it. Dragon Quest.
Better believe it. I always use I always get her name wrong, like Princess Elena, the princess with the blue hat that punched everything. But yeah, I always used her in that game. But yeah, that system had a lot of quality titles on it, and I did go a little buck wild on purchases for Dewey's Adventure and just weird random stuff. But overall, I think the most important thing is that we hit the two main points, the DS and the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, boy.
Because on one hand, they were saying, like, you know, the Switch, I think they had the Super Nintendo at number two. And I was like, well, yeah, I agree with that. But I'm just hampering on this damn Switch, knocking out my DS. No, DS needs to be up there somewhere. Needs to be at the tippy top three.
Yeah, it's still too early on the Switch to call it the best Nintendo console, especially because it's, what, a year and a half? 2 years, something like that?
Not even 2 years. We're coming up on 2 years. And while it has a lot of great games, I feel like it's too early to judge it as a full library. And two, a lot of, like, it's hard to say, but I want to say, like, I don't feel as though the library that it currently has matches up against the greats of the systems that we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
So, but who knows? Maybe 2 years from now? Once Nintendo gets its stride going and other companies finally realize, start thinking we can do some weird things with this system, which, spoiler alert, they won't, because they'll never like to take risk of a console. They're just like, people like to press the buttons. It has these gyroscope things and other doujin above. Nah, no one wants that. We just want to press buttons. Don't try to do it. You had so much potential. They just let that shit salt. Like, they just let it die. Penny Arcade gave them freebies. Shoot, I wrote in freebies. Like, hey, here's an idea. Please make a game like this for old Perny. Nope. But I digress. I love the fact that you wanted to keep us under an hour, and I took us on like a 10 to 20 minute diversion.
Like, yeah, it's only been like 9 minutes so far. It's not that bad.
I mean, I got to talk 11 more minutes to make that statement true.
Oh, no, we got games to talk about. We got to get moving.
I was going to ask you what your favorite chicken wing recipe was.
I don't have one.
Damn it. Damn it again.
But yeah, you got 4 games you got to talk about tonight, so we should probably get moving with these. You ready?
Moving.
You Tom? Ready? Are you ready?
Yes. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Like name Freddy, you know, the claw guy.
Break it down. All right. First game that you're here to talk about is called Monster Boy in the Cursed Kingdom, developed by Game Atelier, published by FDG Entertainment, released December 4th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $39.99. A legendary series returns with the grand new adventure. Can Jin save Monster World Kingdom? Help our young hero defeat challenging enemies, discover hidden locations, upgrade powerful equipment, and more. Purnell, tell us about Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom.
Before I start talking about this game, I need to preface it just a tad. All right. So when I was a child, I was young once, I used to hang out under my uncle, my teenage uncle. And he used to be the man that had all the cool video games and gave me access to those games. But by that same token, he was a teenager and I was a kid. And he didn't want nothing to do with me. He could help it because he wanted to hang out with his boys. So one of his friends had a TurboGrafx-16. And when I learned about that and the cool library he had, I did anything I could possibly do to get into the house to play those games, which is where they would send me to while they hung out and had fun and ignored me. And what would you say was the number one game on the system that I adored? So much so that I eventually got the console.
I'm going to guess it was a Monster Boy game.
Yes, it was. That game was called Dragon's Curse, which in itself was a port of the game Wonder Boy in Monster World. And that game is the prequel to this game that was pretty much, I'm getting the years wrong because I didn't own the Master System version, but like 30 years in the making at this point. So when I heard about this game and went into it, the amount of which I love Dragon's Curse and Oragi, the other title it had, I was ready to go hard on this game. As in, if it was even remotely bad, I would have ragged on it hard because why the heck not? But guess what?
It's good.
It is freaking great. This game made me feel like I was 12 again.
Damn.
In a good way. In a good way. I start this game up. You're fishing on the coastline, and your drunk uncle, who you have no idea, you don't know who he is because you're not supposed to, but as far as the game goes, he's your drunk uncle. He flies in on a barrel, blasting crap, and you have to go chase after him to figure out what the heck is going on. And as you do that, you're running along this beach area, and the music that is playing is a remix of the original beach theme from Wonder Boy in Monster World, and it is glorious. You are hacking and slashing monsters with your sword, exploring the coastline, finding items and like new equipment that lets you do things. Like early on, you get like a pair of boots that are like steel boots. And when you wear them, you can barely walk, but it allows you to walk underwater instead of floating to the surface. It's like stuff like that. And then eventually you fight the first boss. And when you beat him, you become pretty much get cursed by your uncle and you become a pig. A cool pig with a bandana over, or his eye patch over one of his eyes. So, at this point, you are now stuck in the sewers as a pig, and you have to explore to find your way out. And you no longer have a sword and a shield. Now you have your fist for punching, and you have magic spells that you can cast. You only start with the fire spell once you find a magic truffle, which allows you to breathe, like throw fireballs. But then as you get further in the game, the pig gets new spell items, or spells by finding more magic truffles hidden in the environment. But without going too far off on a wind here, eventually you start to realize that you have to save the kingdom by finding 4 random orbs, and you have to go find those, you know, typical video game fashion by going around the world and beating bosses and getting the orbs from the bosses. But the cool quirk is that whenever you beat a boss and get an orb, you get a new animal curse. And that animal curse gives you a new form and new abilities to go with that animal form. And eventually, it gets to the point where one of your animal forms gets you back to accessing a sword, shield, and armor. And now, all of a sudden, it's like a full-on action RPG again. Because now you're buying equipment at stores. You can upgrade the equipment by finding gems hidden around the stages. And if you upgrade the equipment to maximum and then have the full attire for one set, you get a super bonus. So it entices you to want to explore, find all the items, and attach it to all the different equipment. Now, and keep in mind, as the guy listening to me, help me keep on track, because I love this game so much, I'm going to easily go all over the damn place. So when you, like, equipment in this game, it's almost like, it's sort of like puzzly equipment. Like, even though you get, like, different swords and armor and bracelets and shoes, most of those things are things that you can kind of, well, not most of them, but a lot of them are things that you need to progress. Like, you'll find something called, like, the Prince Garment, for example. The Prince Garment's ability is that it allows you to light up the area around you, which is great for dark caves. You cannot beat the game without finding that armor, but the game doesn't make it hard for you to find it. So, with that said, when you do find these equipment items, it feels good. It still feels like you found it, but you don't have to go out of your way to do it. But it's still, there's still like enough secrets in the game that when you find them, it's usually like jewels or more truffles to give you more magic spells or other various items that expand your repertoire or inventory. And they're never really hard to get, but they're still fun to find and locate. And it's just wonderful. Like, the entire sense of exploration and exploring, looking around in this game is glorious. The graphics are fantastic. The music in this game is superb. How superb is it? This is the very first time and I ever that I decided to rip music from a video game because I had to have it off the game.
Oh, wow.
I learned how to rip music from the game in order to record it. There's an area called Greenfields. It's like it's the first place you go to after you leave the town area of the game. And the music in that zone made me feel so good that I put the system, the controller down, and I just enjoyed it. I just let it run. And it did that for like 20 minutes. It just played. I just stuff around. It's a good opportunity to go clean my house because I got this great track playing. Why even keep going? I can just listen to this for a bit. And then I came back and played more of the game. And then I eventually ripped it to Audacity. And now I have the track myself because it's that damn good. It's a long game for a Monster World game. But by that same token, you're not going to get like 50 hours out of it, which by that same token isn't such a bad thing. It's long enough. It's like you'll play through the game, and I have to outright admit that another weird aspect of this game is when I would go to the map to see how far along I'd gotten, and I'd see the percentage tick up higher and higher, I'd get a little sadder because that's 1% that I'll never be able to experience for the first time again. It felt that good to move around and play this game. It's a wonderful game. It's the platforming is challenging, and also I forgot I need to mention this too. So I mentioned earlier how when you get different animal forms, you become able to turn into a new creature, right?
Mm-hmm.
And each one comes with a new ability. Well, you can change between the different animals by hitting the triggers on the controller. It's like an easy click, click, click. Okay, now I'm the pig. Okay, now I'm, I don't want to name them because, well, who am I kidding? They're on the freaking cover. Okay, now I'm the snake. Now I'm the pig. And now I'm the frog and so on and so forth. And each one of those characters has their own mobility skills. And as you play through the game, you'll eventually find orbs that will give each animal one new ability to go along with their default repertoire. So eventually, as you get more animals, the platforming segments will likely end up requiring you to link different animal abilities together to get somewhere. Like, you might need to turn into the snake to slither up the wall. And then as you jump off the wall, you turn into the frog so you can send your tongue out and grab a ring and do an Indiana Jones swing across a pit. You know, and you kind of have to like kind of link and chain all the abilities together to get from point A to point B. And they're not easy jumps half the time. Sometimes they make you work for it. But again, it's a platform adventure game. You don't want it to just be given to you. You want to work for your rewards, right?
Yeah.
You know? And quite frankly, I enjoyed every minute of it. There was no downtime for me.
Nothing at all. No negatives at all.
The only negative I had turned out to be a positive or a misnomer, which is that when you go to the map screen, there is a legend off to the side. And that legend will pretty much tell you, like, here, if you see this emblem, means there's a treasure chest here. If you see this emblem, means there's like a music scroll here, which is a collectible you get in the game. I started to notice that there were chests I would come across that when I was like, okay, crap, I can't get to it right now, but hopefully the map will show that it's there for later. And when I go to the map, for some reason, it wasn't there. Like, it didn't show up.
Hmm.
So I was like, oh, that seems like a weird glitch. But then I couldn't really hate it because I ended up getting the chest 5 minutes later because I ended up getting the means to get to the chest within minutes. So I was like, oh, maybe they didn't mark that one in their code because it was like, well, you're going to get it more or less because the means to get it is right around the corner versus this is definitely a chest you'll have to come back for a couple hours later when you have enough magic to break the chest open, something like that. So I was like, I'm not going to sweat on that too much. But honestly, I genuinely can't. The worst thing I could probably think of is that you kind of don't, I don't care about the plot, but at the same time, there's a lot of games like this, like from back in the day where I didn't care. I didn't care about the plot, the Dragon's Curse. I just wanted to get new animals and wreck stuff. I wanted to be like, oh, I'm a mouse now. What can the mouse do? He can run up walls. That's amazing. Now I can find more stuff with my mouse powers. And this game is the same way. What can the frog do? He can swim. What can the lion do? He can dash. That means I can dash across the water and get to that thing I couldn't get before. What happened about your uncle? Who cares about my uncle? There's an adventure. I'm on an adventure for him. You got to save the cursed kingdom. Everyone's cursed to be like animals, to turn into animals. You got to save them. I don't care about those people. I just want a cool new tunic.
That's a good way to put it.
Yes, it's like I genuinely couldn't give two hoots or goots about the plot. It's just an excuse to give you the means to do awesome things in this fantastic, colorful, vibrant world. It's fun, and it's a wonderful game that I am so, so glad came out, because when they originally had the Kickstarter many, many moons ago, I was worried because I thought they kind of just forgot the game existed because it disappeared, and then there was all this talk about Wonder Boy and the Dragon's Trap getting remade, but this game kind of fell off the radar, and out of nowhere, poof, it comes back. And here I am playing it, and I have nothing to be disappointed about. This game is in my top for 2018.
Damn. Well, then yeah. Overall, $40 on it. What's your verdict?
Buy the shit. Buy it. Buy it. Buy it. It is good.
I will.
Yes, sir.
As soon as I get my Christmas money.
You have to tell me what your experience is with it when you do.
Will do. If I ever get time to play it, because God knows I never have time to actually play stuff anymore.
I know the feeling. That's why I love, especially when I get to games, like I get the review, because like, okay, this is an excuse to actually play a game because I'm reviewing it. I'm on the clock. So yep. It's like, all right.
Speaking of, next game to talk about is called Gris, developed by Nomada Studio, published by Devolver Digital, released December 13th on Switch and Steam for $16.99. Gris is a hopeful young girl lost in her own world, dealing with a painful experience in her life. Her journey through sorrow is manifested in her dress, which grants new abilities to better navigate her faded reality. Pernell, what is this game?
Sly devil, this game doesn't involve a clock. I was waiting for that. Like, speaking of which, like, no, it doesn't. It's a lie. But even though it doesn't involve a clock, Gris does involve some spectacular, and I mean spectacular, imagery. This is a game where it hits the school of thought from games like Flower and Journey. Titles where the idea is like, the entire thing is just an experience in general. Like, you're embarking on this adventure. And the scope of this particular game, similar to those games, you are maneuvering through this dreamlike world, but there is no, like, actual story conveyed through, like, it's not being force-fed to you. There is no dialogue. No one shows up and says, you are the lost child of the dusk. Restore the colors. And no one, there's no one to tell you that. In fact, you can play this entire game and have no freaking idea what the hell was going on. But with that said, I'm going to wager that a person playing this game in that regard already knows what they're in for, because this is a game about artful platforming, and it has that in spades. As you kind of get up from your weird beginnings where you're kind of like crying in the middle of a palm, and then the palm collapses and you fall to the ground, you start out kind of hobbling, like unable to, you're barely able to walk, and then eventually you start to be able to walk, and then you're able to jump. And then you start getting abilities, and as you play through the game, your character actually becomes more and more capable of exploring this world. In addition to that, one thing I thought was pretty cool about it is, like, it starts out colorless, like completely devoid of color. It's like a whole gray atmosphere or landscape. But as you progress through the game, you restore various colors. Like you start out, just a general example, the first color you restore is red. And when you restore red, all the things in the landscape that would have utilized red now has red in it. And it just, it's like, it looks like a minimalist painting.
Hmm.
And then each time you get a new color, it just builds on it and it becomes more and more gorgeous. You are playing through this game, essentially trying to, it's like a more of like point, get to from point A to point B, but there's no like, you know, open world atmosphere. It's just, you're trying to get to the end, quote unquote. And as you progress, you do different things. Like, for example, you collect stars as you come across them. And those stars, when you come across certain points in the map, they will allow you to build like a sort of constellation bridge. And when I say build, I mean the stars will actually just connect and create the bridge. You're not actually drawing it or anything. But the bridge will be formed and it allows you to traverse it. And in addition to that, like I said earlier, you'll get various abilities that will allow you to explore the environment and then eventually either just progress further, or some cases there's like collectible, like bullseyes, I call them. Because once you collect it, it just kind of like lights up the circle and then three dots will appear above it. And it's like your thing to say, hey, I'm looking and finding extra stuff. And do all due honesty, it's one of those where it's like you just kind of do it because it feels good to do. Because again, you're enjoying the atmosphere and the world so much as you run around that you want to see more that it has to offer. So you want to discover how is it that this thing results in you getting up to this high ledge, thereby smashing into this platform, turning a clock, which then allows you, I found a clock, by the way, which then allows you to turn this platform, which turns the clock, which allows you to rod the hand, which then allows you to collect this circle, which does nothing. But it's cool to do because it's a puzzle that you got to solve to find something a little random, a little tidbit. But the entire game, as I played through it, though I was kind of like, huh, what's going on here? I wasn't really picking up on the symbolism so much, but I was picking up on the joy of actually just seeing the world exist and breathe. And quite frankly, that was what it was worth to me. I feel as though if you're the type of person who likes these artsy games, these art style games, you would enjoy this game. Don't come into it expecting grueling platforming or difficult work. Come into it expecting to move through the atmosphere, see what it has to offer, and just kind of judge for yourself what the art style means to you. But I do believe that if you do come into this game, you will not be disappointed as long as you know what you're getting going into it.
So it's more of an experience than a challenge.
Yes, sir. Very much so.
Well, then $17 on it. What do you think?
I would say as a try it if you're uncertain about, you know, I'm not familiar with a lot of artsy games. I wasn't around for The Journey. I wasn't really around for the other games I mentioned earlier. But if you have played those games and you know you like that kind of stuff, this is a definite buy. This is artsy as hell. And it's good. It's a very beautiful and pleasant experience to take on. Albeit a little sorrowful, but that's art.
I want to see that in a trailer. Artsy as hell. Pernell Vaughn, the SML podcast.
Artsy as hell. That would be some mess. I was like, wow, that guy really thought it was artsy. Artsy as hell, yeah.
It's Devolver. They might. You never know with them.
That is true. Good point.
They're kind of crazy, and I love them for it.
I do, too. That freaking sarsaparilla stand in the parking lot was still like, that was what's, aside from their E3 thing the year before, it was like heads exploding on the stage and mess. I will say it was them setting up in a freaking like messy parking lot across the street. I was like, these guys are crazy. And I love it. we're going to mooch off the audience, but not pay one red cent that those guys are paying. It is perfect.
Yeah. Speaking of crazy, next game to talk about is called Nippon Marathon, developed by Onion Soup Interactive, published by P-Cube, released December 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $14.99. Stretch your muscles and embark upon the ultimate marathon of Nippon in a crazy physics-driven four-player party racer where anything can happen. And I mean literally anything can happen in this game. Pernell, tell us about it.
I'm going to say, unlike the last one, you got that one perfectly. Crazy was a very good word to jump onto this game with, because it is bizarre. You are basically running through what is the equivalent to, like, I guess, I'm trying to remember the name of the show because I always screw it up. It's like Takeshi's Castle. I used to mess with it back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese, like obstacle course type show. And it would always have weird things like, you know, the plan was like, okay, here's a wall that has like Tetris piece carve-outs and you have to kind of dive through the Tetris piece carvings or whatever. Or jump over the different like floating platforms, that kind of thing. And this game is essentially that boiled down to a video game where you're one of four racers trying to get from one end of an obstacle course to the other to win the race. Now, it isn't just a one and done course where you get from the start to the end. It breaks up based on when people get knocked off the course. So as you are running, there are various obstacles ranging from simple things like people in the middle of the course to weird things like Shiba Inus trying to bite you and snakes that are shaking up the environment and making it fall and making it hard to run. In shopping carts, because there's also shopping carts. There's just a lot of weird crap that gets in your way in this game. Lots of weird crap. And if, let's say, for example, you fall behind as everyone else is running ahead, or you take too many, like, you know, damage and gets knocked off the side of the course, then you are out until there's one person standing. And at that point, that guy will get a star. And then the course will start again at a checkpoint, and everyone gets a chance to go again. And this happens multiple times until you eventually reach the end of the full course, and that they total up your stars in addition to, like, your, like, things you've picked up on the track, like items and your popularity. Popularity? Yes, I said that. Because there's also this weird aspect of the game where a TV show host, I'm assuming, from what I read, the creator of the game just kind of thought this was a cool guy to come up with. A person named Wendy Jones is a woman with a jetpack who sometimes flies onto the course, in the middle of the course, and asks trivia questions. Now, these aren't real trivia questions like how many spikes are on Bart Simpson's head. No. This is nonsensical crap. Like, why? Like, what happened to all the wheat out in what happened to all the video games of Super Potato or something? Or why do you like shopping in, you know, Shibuya? And then what the game will do is it'll show you four different options, and each one will have like a face next to like an emoji. And you have to be quick on the draw to press the button corresponding with that segment of dialogue related to the emoji. And then you do that for like three or four moments. And that ultimately creates a statement. And then they'll combine all the parts to make one statement. And then the audience judges you based on how cool your statement was. There is no logic, rhyme, or reason to this. It's just wacky. Like, you can kind of
get batshit crazy.
Yes, it is. Like, you're not meant to really be like studying this stuff because you won't have time. You're just like, crap, it looks like a smiley face next to that statement. That must be good. And you just kind of start linking it together and just like, Shibuya has apples, but they're expired, so I throw them at grandma's. And then the audience will rate you on that based on how cool they thought the statement was. And that goes towards like your popularity score. It's like a little side mitt to the main game. But
and that's not the only side thing that'll happen. Like, the one time I was playing it, all four of us were abducted and thrown into a maze, and whoever made it through the maze first won a star. And then we were just sent back to the game like nothing happened.
That's what's up. See, I never even experienced that mini game.
There's just so many weird mini games that are going to happen that make no sense for the most part.
But I will say this just to cover the bases, because I'm sure there's probably a few cats out there like, but I don't really give two shits about minigames. I just want to run the damn races. Well, if you don't like that, you can turn those off. It's a very easy thing to do in the game. You shouldn't, because they are pretty cool. Though I can imagine if you're like, I just want to keep the momentum of the races going, I can understand why you do that too. But the options are there for either end of the spectrum for the player. But it's a game where I'm going to say it just like this, flat out. When Joe said, Purnell, you want to review this game, Nippon Marathon? I looked at the trailer and said, I like the concept, but the art and everything is not really clicking for me. This is one of those games where I feel like if Joe never brought it to my attention and I just saw it on a list of games, I would have probably ignored it. Thankfully, I got a chance to play it before being so rash. Because this game is a lot of fun. I like the fact that you can pick up various fruit on the courses. Ranging from like pineapples to like watermelons to banana peels or bananas. And you can either use it as an item, similar to how Mario Kart would do it. The pineapple being a balloon, for example, lets you float to the ground. The watermelon, you kind of throw it like a bomb and hit other players. Banana peel, you drop a banana peel behind you. The mushroom, if you pick mushrooms up, you just stink. And you start coughing and losing points. So you have to drop the mushroom and make someone else pick up so they can start losing popularity points because they stink and smell like mushrooms. But in addition, if you feel as though you'd rather not use it as an item, you can press another button to eat the fruit instead. and it gives you a speed boost. Don't eat the mushroom, though, because you'll get very sick. Mm-hmm. Basically, mushrooms are bad across the board. But I like the aspect of that, how you can pick up fruit, and when you pick fruit items up, it would go on your, you can get one for your left hand and one for your right hand, so you can kind of carry two items at once. And there's a button, there's two buttons for your right hand and two buttons for your left hand for, you know, using it versus eating the item. And I honestly found great joy in that. It takes a little getting used to the controls at first, so I will acknowledge that too, because it's not, the controls aren't what I'd say tight, but once you adjust to what they are, you become better at the game. Like, I got way better at the game than when I first started playing it, just from experiencing it and getting into it. By like the fifth race, I was actually doing pretty well and earning those damn stars left and right.
I sucked at the game.
Across the board?
I was awful. I kept losing. The first time I played it, I came in second. The fifth time I played it, I came in fourth. And that was just a theme where I came in last so much. But I was having a blast with it because it's so goofy and so weird.
Yes, it is. Downright, it's just a genuinely enjoyable game. Like, I found bliss in it. And the environments you run through aren't even like simple either. Like, it goes, it starts out in simple places. Like, hey, I am running through like just a quiet Japanese village, which in itself is still weird based on how this game does it. But it goes from that, eventually you're running through a supermarket, a la Supermarket Sweep. There's a moment where you're jumping off the side of an office building onto a Ferris wheel, off the Ferris wheel onto like this weird like mesh mat, and you have to keep going. It's a really freaking weird. It even has those doors where it'll be like five doors, and three of them will have frowny faces, and two of them will have smiley faces. And if you run into the frowny faces, you'll slam into the wall. But if you go into the smiley faces, you'll go through the door.
It's like, just crazy. And there's mini game, like there's party games in there, like a lobster run. There's bowling in the game. There's just so much weird shit in this game, and it's incredible.
Yeah, the bowling is like just weirdly fun. Like, so the bowling in this game is you're in a bowling alley, and there's a shopping cart that you have to adjust like the positioning of, just like if you were like doing like golf or something, you were trying to place the ball or something. You basically place the shopping cart and then the direction you want to point to, and then you have to take your character, run, jump into the shopping cart, and then aim the shopping cart at the bowling pins, like steer it into them. But funny enough, if you miss the shopping cart, it's just your body flailing towards bowling pins. It's surprisingly weird how that works. But, like, it's fun. Like, it's a lot of fun. And the lobster run that Joe mentioned is, I believe it's like kind of like horse as far as how the lobster letters are doled out. But basically, you are just on like a randomly generated obstacle course done by like a wheel of misfortune sort of deal. And you and the other contestants are trying to get as far into this obstacle course as you possibly can. And the winner, whoever gets the farthest, does not get letters or something like that. But it's just fun to play. Like, I was having fun even doing that. It's just a good game. It's a lot of fun.
Well, then overall, $15 on it. What do you think?
I think it's a buy, especially if you have friends to do multiplayer with. If you have multiplayer friends, it's a no freaking brainer.
Yeah, I agree. If this is going to be something that when I have friends come over for a party night, I'm going to force them to play this game and then watch the looks on their faces as it just clicks what kind of weirdness that I'm subjecting them to.
Yes. Very good game. Oh, and I forgot. I don't know why this appealed to me. It's just a bizarre little aspect of the game. But as you're running through the courses, every once in a while, you'll find a tour guide manual page. And when you find it, it gets added to Weddy Jones's travel journal. And it's just that announcer character telling you details about various aspects of Japan. It's bizarre. It had no need to be there, but it's in the game, and it's funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. I just keep saying that. Anyway, you got one last game to talk about. That is called Desert Child, developed by Oscar Britton, published by Acupara Games, released December 11th on PS4, PC, and Switch, December 12th on Xbox One for $11.99. You are a hungry young hoverbike racer who needs to get off Earth before it explodes. Hunt bounties, throw races, and do whatever you can to get to Mars and win the Grand Prix. Pernell, what is Desert Child?
Desert Child, oddly enough, of all the games on tonight's roster, this is the one that shocked me the most, because Nippon Marathon was one where I was like, I'm not expecting much from this, and it was floored, you know. Gris, it was like, I never heard of this game. Artsy game, I guess maybe I'll like it. End up thinking it was pretty cool. Desert Child, when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this game's going to be amazing. This looks really cool. And then I got to play it, and I didn't quite get that vibe. But I'll go into why in a second. So
it's an odd one, that's for sure.
It really is. It really is. So what Joe said earlier is pretty much the base plot of the early game, which is you are on Earth, Earth's going to shit, and you need to get off this planet. And the way you decide to do it is by getting earning money through racing to buy a ticket to Mars, because the price of Mars tickets are about to go up. So you're like, I got to do it before it becomes unaffordable, and I'm stuck here to die. So the game starts out with you running a few races. It runs you to the overall concept of you run a race. I'll go into describing what the race is like in a minute, but you run a race, complete the race, you sell power cells that you can win from the races, repair your bike, eat food, and then eventually make enough money to go to Mars after a few races. And once you're on Mars, the main game itself, so to speak, opens up. And the goal is you need to win, you need to amass a large sum of money. I think it was like $100,000. Yes, $100,000. You need to amass $100,000 or $10,000 to enter the Grand Prix and beat the game if you can win the Grand Prix. And to do that, you fulfill a number of odd jobs, 1v1 races, and so on and so forth. But every single side job involves this very specific mechanic, the racing in the game. And racing in this game involves you getting on your bike and going full steam ahead in like a sort of still image of sorts, like it's a 2D race. You can go up and down, front and back, and as you drive, there are various TV monitors that will show up on the course. Some of them will involve you like blowing them up to get money. Some you will blow up to get ammunition. I say you don't blow them up, you just want to drive through them, and you'll get ammunition for your gun. And you will, and when you run out of gun ammo, similar to Spy Hunter, a truck will show up at the bottom of the screen. You have to dash onto the truck to refuel your ammo. And you use the gun to, like I mentioned earlier, blast TV screens and also shoot at your opponent that is on the track with you. I don't know. I never actually blew the opponent up, but I assume you at least slow them down when you're hitting them with bullets. And if you get to the end of the race before they do, you get credited for it. Now, there are a bunch of like side missions in the game. And so one side mission, for example, will be something weird like, well, I need you to help me corral these kangaroos. And the corralling of the kangaroos involves you being in a race environment, chasing the kangaroos down, and as the kangaroos show up on the screen, to get behind them so that they hop further ahead into the pack. So it's still racing, is just now, instead of racing after a guy, you are now just racing up to kangaroos and not letting yourself pass them. There's another side mission, for example, where it's like, hey, I need you to deliver these pieces. And that side mission, I'll admit, was actually kind of fun, was you are also, instead of riding your bike, you're riding an actual delivery bike, and you're throwing pizza at like silhouette people while a really weird track of music singing about how much pizza delivery is cool is playing in the background. But the thing about it was, and the thing that made this rough and annoying, is that at the beginning of the game, this is all a lot of fun. You know, that loop of enter a race, win, sell power cores, you know, also get food, because the food, your hunger meter is what determines how well you're able to boost in races. When you get too hungry, you got to pay for food on the planet to get to fill your stomach up. Once you've gotten tired of this loop, you feel like there's not a whole lot left to the game, because everything is centered around this very specific gameplay loop. There is like cool music in the game, which I adored, and I would wholeheartedly recommend, whether you buy the game or not, to look into getting this OST, because a lot of the tracks I couldn't even get Shazam to pull up, because I was just curious about, hey, are these tracks out there somewhere? Like, there's a band called, I guess, Girlfriend Material that contributed music to the game, along with like Mega Ran, whose music does show up on Spotify, and a couple other bands that I could not find these tracks in the usual places, but they're great to hear in the game. And when you buy the CDs at the local store, they'll play as you're walking around the town. Side tangent, but at the same time, I had to point that out. The music in this game is really freaking good. But that's a side element to the game. There is the mentioning earlier where I think you mentioned something about crime earlier, right? When you said things you got to do to get your money earned, built up.
Hunt bounties, throw races, do whatever you can.
Thank you, sir. Yes, the things that Joe is referring to when he makes that statement is that some of the side missions involve you going to like a seedy area of town and that CD area has a particular like nightclub. And when you walk in, you get a list of options of things you can do, including throwing races. So you'll end up entering a race. You'll try to race it, get to the end, and then say, nope, I'm going to just fall back. And then you threw the race, and you'll get money for that. Or you can sometimes like come across a bike just parked on the street, and you can like click to steal a bike part off of the bike, and you'll go with like this little quick like number mini game where you have to hit the button when the number on the roulette is red, and you'll eventually do that four times and unlock the bike part. The bounty concept is you'll enter it's not an actual race, but it plays like a race where you're on the track and the bounty is the other racer, and you're shooting your gun at him trying to stop him from getting to the end of the course, basically, because if he gets to the end of the course, it's like he got away. So that's those things that you described there. But I do feel like I should also mention, because this is one thing I feel like I think needs to come up. So there is a bit of customization in this game, though, aside from just eating food and taking these missions. There are a limited number of bike parts you can come across in the game. Like I mentioned earlier, you can steal bike parts sometimes. Other times you can buy bike parts. And for the most part, that's how you get them. And when you go to your bike that's parked on the street at the, you know, whenever you restart the game, you can go to the bike and sort of, it brings up a sort of grid, and you get parts for the bike that are kind of like Tetris-esque pieces, like Tetromino shapes, and you can kind of plug the bike parts in, and as long as you can make them touch the power center, it powers the part and it gives you benefits like, you know, increased gunpower on the courses. In some cases, you might get like an advertisement where if you race with this advertisement, you'll get a discount at the restaurant where you get food from, stuff like that. There aren't a lot of bike parts in the game, but it's still kind of nice that they're there if you want to manipulate those. But like I said earlier, I think the main issue I had with the game is that the game mechanic is good, but I didn't think it was good enough to carry a full experience, because eventually I got tired of it. And I was like, okay, what's next? What more is there to do? Well, I've experienced it all. That's it. I feel like something that might have made it a little bit smoother is that you're doing a lot of walking around on Mars to get to the different places you want to go, whether it's to buy food or deposit your money into the bank or go to the seedy side of town. And as you're doing that, it has an artsy style to it, because you might be walking with a 2D perspective in one area of town, and then you go to the next screen. Now it's a top-down view as you're walking down the street. And another area might just show your shoes hitting the sidewalk as you stand in front of doorways which you can enter to do stuff. But eventually, of course, you'll get tired of that too, because it's that loop of, okay, I got to walk across town to get food again. I don't feel like doing that. I'm tired of it. And it'd been nice if at that point it's like, hey, do you want to just access the quick location menu and say, I'm going to the ramen shop? Yes, let's do that. Go right to the ramen shop, you know, because I'm sure you've played games like that too, where you explore the same area so often that you kind of just go there.
It just gets kind of tedious after a while.
Exactly. You just want to get to where you're going and get things done. But I feel like that might in and of itself help to reduce some of the tedium if that happened, because while the races do lose a lot of their luster, they don't actually stop really being fun though. Because as you get to different courses, there's like new obstacles that'll pop up. Like on one type of obstacle, you'll be driving across the water and it'll be like a wave machine that'll send waves at you. You have to dodge the waves. Other times there'll be highways and there'll be cars in the road. You got to dodge the cars. And that stuff, when you come across those new obstacles, it feels a bit fun, you know, but imagine how cool it would have been if instead of having one racer on the track, sometimes you had four and it got chaotic and calamitous, you know, I mean, it's a Grand Prix. It should be multiple racers, many guys on the track. But it's just weird, small quirks like that, where it's like, I don't feel as though the game is bad. Far from it. In fact, I think the game has quality aspects to it. I just feel like it needed to be a tad bit meatier.
Yeah. Do you want to know the most impressive thing about it, though?
What?
It's all done by one guy.
Seriously?
Yes.
See, I can appreciate that. That was part of why I liked Iconoclast so much back when it came out. When one person goes through all the effort to put out a product as a labor of love, that goes very far for me.
Yeah. When I said developed by Oscar Britton, that's not a company. That's a guy. He, outside of some of the songs that were contributed, like you mentioned, by the way, the soundtrack's available on Steam. So if you buy the game on Steam, you could buy the soundtrack for $8. Everything else in the game was just done by Oscar. So that blows my mind that a game this meaty, despite the fact that the races can get a little tedious after a while, a game this big with so much to do, because it's basically like a hover bike racing RPG for the most part, made by one dude, that blows my mind.
Yeah, but that's the only thing I want to point out, though. The RPG part, again, maybe it's not too bad, because I think the problem I might have is that when I think RPGs, I get a little too into the paint. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, what are my stats? You know, what are my racer stats? But
okay, RPG, you know, elements.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Yeah.
It has RPG. Goddamn nitpicker.
I'm a nitpick! But yeah, I see what you're saying. They're like, it has RPG elements for sure. Whether it's like, you know, again, tweaking your bike to your standing, or, you know, like determining how you personally want to run through your bike career. Like, because you could probably play through the entire game and never commit a single crime. In fact, aside from trying the stuff out just for the sake of this review, I didn't do any crimes because I didn't want to. I'm not a criminal. I'm a loyal and noble biker, damn it. But if you don't want to do that, there's like nothing is forcing you to commit crimes in this game. You can constantly just go to the want as board and take on teach me how to ride a bike courses trainings and, you know, herd my kangaroos and deliver these pieces. You are totally welcome to do that. No qualms. You can even just be that guy who every day checks the buys the paper from the little paperboy kit and learn about what the heck's going on Mars. I mean, those options do exist. In fact, I feel like in some respects, this game, its longevity almost solely depends on the user in regards to the bike races. Like, I know this is going to seem weird because we are technically reviewing the game right now, but bring up one quick trailer and try to look like to stare at that bike race. And if that looks like something that you could do 30 times or so, there you go. That might be your indicator right there, because everything else around that is pretty decent, aside from that I wish there was like a quick travel option. But everything else around that's pretty decent. It's just a matter of I wish there was more. Yeah. So if you're okay with that bike element, you're going to have fun with this, because I personally did like the bike element. Just I got tired of it after a while. It's like, I want more to do. So it feels weird to make that statement because ultimately I like the art style to it. I like that it makes me feel like I'm playing like a classic. I don't want to say DOS game because I think it's more than DOS. It's like, but I will say early Windows.
Like, yeah, I could see that.
It makes me feel like I'm playing a classic Windows game in a good way. So, and that was like a nice smile effect that I had to the game.
Well, overall,
mention. I'm sorry. Ahead. Firepower in the game. When you play this game, like, you don't buy. There's a lot of different guns in the game, like four or five different guns, but you don't actually buy the guns. What happens is when you start the game, they give you the option to choose what kind of gun you want to use, like a machine gun or a shotgun sort of deal. And each weapon comes with a difficulty, I guess, indicating how hard the developer felt it would be to do what you have to do on the track using that style of gun. And once you pick that type of gun, you're locked into that kind of gun until you beat the game or start a new game. Like, you can't change guns throughout the game.
Yeah.
Just wanted to point that out, because that's definitely, I think that's an important aspect to the game in and of itself. It's cool that you get the options, but you have to know that you're not switching them out as you see fit. That's pretty much like your difficulty setting.
No, you could always pick one, run a race or two, see if you like it. If not, just start over while it's early.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, there's nothing stopping the player from, you know, experimenting and saying which gun works for me. Just saying, like, just the thought that, you know, you just, because that's for some, that's an important aspect. It's like, okay, I can't change guns to fit the situation. I'm choosing the gun to fit the play experience.
Yeah, so it would have been nice to have that option, I guess.
Yeah, I think so, or at least let you just, like, maybe be one more thing for you to buy. Like, okay, I want to buy an upgraded gun. I don't know. Like, this gun has a little bit more oomph to it, though I guess technically that's what the gun parts are for the bike.
Yeah. But overall, only $12 on this one. What do you think of it?
I do think it's a try, because, again, this is not I don't find this to be a deny it level by a long shot, because there is a quality game here. Again, it's just a matter of, will it be enough for you, like, long term? And honestly, I feel like at that price tag, 10 races, along with the elements to the game and the music in the game, I think you end up getting your money's worth.
Yeah, I see that.
Because, again, I played that music. I bought, like, two music tracks from the store. Like, I bought more than two, but I bought two specific ones that kind of had the similar effect of what I mentioned earlier today about the Monster Boy game, where I was like, eh, this track sounds pretty good. I can listen to this. Yeah. Bop my head to it a little bit. And wash some dishes, let it play, you know, take some food out of the oven, let the music play while I, you know, do all my meal prep. It's good stuff.
So the game's a try it, the soundtrack, or yeah, the game is a try it, the soundtrack is a buy it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Look up awesome. Girlfriend material today.
Awesome. Pernell, it is always good having you on chatting about these games. We somehow did keep it under an hour, just barely. So do you have any final words?
Well, I want to tell you guys about my current quick get-rich-quick scheme that I've been working on. You see, it involves...
Oh, Jesus.
And these pills... I'm not going to go that route. So I could have... These pills are magical. But just keep getting your game on. Be glad the year is coming to an end, but I think we may still have a few more quality titles to push us even through the final week of the year. So you're not getting a break anytime soon, but... try to find the time you got, while you got, to play some quality product.
All right, and finally tonight, we've got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing good.
You excited for Christmas?
Yeah, I'll be in Japan for it, so that's my first time being in Japan, so...
That sounds a lot more fun than what I'll be doing for Christmas.
What will you be doing for Christmas?
Probably nothing.
Aww. Well, I'll be probably doing nothing, but also in a different country.
Which sounds so much cooler.
Yeah, that's true. But that means I'll be not here for the next show, right? Because you're doing one more show until
we're doing this episode, and then we're doing our usual Saturday episode, and then we're doing one more show on probably Thursday after Christmas.
Yeah.
Which you will be a part of.
Oh, I will be on that one, yes.
Yeah.
When I get back. Okay.
So we have pre-Japan Chris now, and next week we'll have post-Japan Chris.
Yes. I'll try not to be insufferable and start speaking in Japanese or anything like that.
That's a good thing, because I wouldn't be able to understand anything.
Me neither. It's not a language I speak.
Yet you're going there.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, it makes sense.
I speak the universal language, English.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, you got three games to talk about tonight, and a fun theme, they are all published by Cubic Games, so that's pretty
neat. Yeah, it's the Cubic Trilogy, and in fact, they've been kind of, I noticed they've been advertised all together like that.
Yeah, they are all coming out on December 22nd.
Yeah, we're getting the early reviews in, like a professional level podcast that we are.
I know, it's kind of scary.
It's okay. We'll get through this.
Okay. First game that you're here to talk about is called Mana Spark, developed by Behemoth and Kishimoto Studios, published by Cubic Games, releasing December 22nd on Switch for $9.99. A challenging action RPG with deep Souls-like combat and roguelike elements. Explore a dreadful dungeon and fight smart enemies that will plan and collaborate between themselves to defeat you. Chris, what is Mana Spark?
Mana Spark. I guess some people might say Mana Spark, but we know better.
I'm a mana guy.
Yeah, me too. It's always the secrets and legacies and childrens were always of manas for me. But so Mana Spark, it's not a mana game in the usual sense, which is interesting. But yeah, so the plot is hard to follow, not really. So I guess mana is a thing that some creatures that took over the human race have and humans don't. But some humans have been able to use it to a small degree, and your character is one such person. You are meant to band together with your fellow humans who have escaped enslavement by such monsters, and you have to get through dungeons while also building up an encampment that you can return to at various points in the game, or should you die. The encampment is something that you improve upon by collecting runes which are dropped randomly by enemies, and I suppose occasionally you can get them elsewhere. So the presentation of it is a top-down, pretty speedy top-down sort of thing. I think that you're meant to always start as the archer, but I could tell from gameplay videos that you get other characters with different fighting styles eventually. But the initial archer character acts like basically a very slow twin stick shooter. Like, he moves fast enough, but arrows have a cooldown, so you can only shoot like one arrow every like 5 seconds.
Yeah,
which was fine with me because I noticed, you know, the game says Souls-like combat, but I've never played a Souls game. But I could definitely say that as a Skyrim player, it was pretty consistent with that. But it's kind of like, you know how in the about, I'd say, 12, 15 years ago era, I guess even more than that, you would have like these 3D games that would come on like PlayStation 2, like, I don't know, Heroes of Might and Magic. No, Warriors of Might and Magic. And like it would come out on PlayStation 2 and be like this grand 3D adventure, and then like a Game Boy Color version would come out and it would basically be like a really good NES game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of like what this game is. It's like the Game Boy Color version of some kind of 3D, you know, badass game. Because
a good way to put it.
Yeah. Like, because the animation is nice and fluid, the backgrounds are great, the music is excellent, but your character is just, like, a few scant pixels of a thing, and most of the enemies are also sort of detailless sprites. So, in that sense, you know, everything's a top-down, Zelda-like thing, you go from room to room, you know, and you unlock rooms, and then, like a true roguelike, you get to the staircase and get down to the next floor, and you can't retrace your steps. You can just get to an area like a rest area where you can purchase upgrades with coins and runes that you find, and you can also save your runes, and this is very important. The runes that enemies drop, you can save them in certain quote-unquote peculiar rooms, and so when you die, you go back to the encampment where you meet a guy who basically for two runes he goes and finds another villager for you, and every villager that you add to the town gives you new permanent things that you can add to your character to start him off. And each of those characters has a thing that, or an ability to upgrade the thing as well if you collect enough runes. So it's a roguelike, but yeah, it's roguelite in the sense that your runes, if you can make it to the peculiar room and save them, you can actually, like, you know, purchase more upgrades and things like that. And so, you know, each time you can get stronger, which is my favorite way to play a roguelike.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the combat is actually fairly difficult. I was very interested in this whole enemy AI thing. And sure enough, yeah, you like, so the first instance of it you're likely to see is in the foresty first part of the game. So, like, there are little goblin guys that have arrows or spears that they throw at you or something like that. And if there's a warthog in range, which a warthog will just, if it senses you, it will just charge at you. If they're near a warthog and they see you, they will climb onto the warthog and they will both attack you together.
And that is awesome.
Yeah. And it actually gets even more complicated. Like, there are skeletons in a lower part of another dungeon that you can get into that, let's say there's a skeleton with a shield and a sword, or a shield and a bow and arrow, because this game does not follow Skyrim rules. and then there's another skeleton that just throws hatchets. Well, the enemy with the shield will actually get in front of the enemy without a shield and will start trying to block your arrows. And will actually wait to attack you until you get close enough, while the other enemy will lob, like, axes and stuff at you. So it actually becomes really tough very early on.
Damn.
This is definitely a game that is meant to challenge players again and again. And the layout of the dungeons, while it always uses the same levels and roughly the same shapes of the rooms, they're fairly simplistic, you know, rectangular rooms. It is procedural, and so, you know, you'll end up with a different experience pretty much every time. And enemy drops are, like, totally random. Like, one time I wound up with 5 runes within the first couple of areas, which is, you know, that you go after the encampment, you go through 2 initial areas to get to the first room where you can save your runes. I'm saying so many similar words. And then, so I found, like, 5 one time, and then one time I found 0. So, you know, it's definitely the kind of game that you're just going to get, like, really hooked on and just keep playing and playing and playing. And here's an interesting thing. The game actually kind of knows that. So if you wait a second after you get the You Died screen, which, by the way, the You Died screen is definitely a ripoff of Dark Souls. It has its own version of You Died. which is, of course, the infamous game over screen on Dark Souls. Anyways, if you wait a second after the you died, and if you've unlocked a certain thing, I'm not exactly sure what I unlocked to get this, a lady will show up and she'll offer to flip three cards over to start you over in the game, so you don't get to visit your encampment to choose things that you can start with. Instead, you can choose three random things to start with that are potentially really, really good. So, like, you could start with a different character, you can start with a random power-up, and in some cases, especially the first case where I tried it, and I had four runes that I was going to lose because I had not saved them, it allowed me to get those four runes back.
Oh.
Yeah, so, like, you can choose to either go back to your encampment and, like, you know, arm your character up however you like, or you can just flip cards and just do it randomly, which I actually found that super interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I didn't run into that at all. I dabbled with the game a little bit, probably not as much as you. I got my ass handed to me.
Yeah, the key is to get those runes and get to the room where you can save the runes. Goddamn. And so then at least if you die, you can save up enough to start getting some cool stuff and upgrading it. And then that's when the lady starts appearing, I guess. I only had two villagers unlocked when that happened. Yeah.
Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
$10. This is a deceptively deep game. So I just looking at the upgrade trees for like my different villagers and stuff, I was like, oh, damn, I'm going to keep coming back to this because this is exactly the kind of roguelike I always come back to. And that's the one that persistently allows you to improve and never quite lose everything, you know? Like the lose everything games are fine sometimes, but I usually find that I'll just pick them up when I'm ready to like really commit some time to it. But this one you can pick up more quickly. I think the only thing that really got to me on this one was that I had to learn to sort of run with so you run with one stick and you aim with the other stick. Well, when you push the right stick to aim, it jolts the camera over in the direction of where you're aiming. So. Yeah. That started to make me really dizzy, so I actually ended up just running in and aiming in a direction that I would just then move around so that at least I could follow the camera better.
Yeah.
That's, like, the only complaint, really. It's fine. I definitely recommend this for people who like these kind of games.
My only minor gripe that I had with the game is I had a hell of a time aiming when I was playing it in handheld mode. When I played it in docked mode, yeah, just... the twin stick, because I have fat sausage fingers.
Yeah, my thumbs are pretty clumsy, too.
Just how tiny the analog stick is made it hard for me to aim as precisely as I wanted. But when I played with the Pro Controller, it was fine.
I mostly played this with a Pro Controller, and I was fine. I think but the aiming thing was kind of an issue for me, too. What I found helped was just to aim in one direction and then run to aim the rest of the character.
That works.
So I'd, like... I'd aim like straight down and then run my character parallel to the enemy and then fire at will. But yeah, like, and I didn't mention this game has like big badass bosses, which I actually really like. It's a little bit like Souls in that way. And yeah, those bosses, you really have to be able to aim while running, in order to take them down because they will be on your ass.
They will wreck your shit.
Yeah, but, and you know, again, the cool thing is that there are power-ups that can combat this. Like, I found a power-up that allows you to shoot two arrows at once, so there's ways around it. You just have to keep playing it.
Sounds good. Well, the next game that you're here to talk about is called Coloro, or Coloro, again, with Coloro. These names. Coloro, that could be it. Developed by Skull Studio, published again by Cubic Games. This one is also releasing December 22nd. On the Switch for $9.99. Between Dreams and Nightmares, Coloro tells the tale of a young pink-haired girl named Cora who embarks on a quest to find her missing sister through a stunning puzzle platformer. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, Coloro. So this is a game that is a challenge platformer with, you know, single screen type of rooms. So challenge platformers, at least what I call challenge platformers, are ones where you basically have to get from one point to the other, and everything in between is spikes or enemies or just something that is going to kill you. But this game actually introduces a not only is it done well, but it actually introduces a new what they call a unique mechanic. I don't know about that, but it is new for me. And that is the way it controls. So you have your Cora and Laura. I don't remember the character names already. But yes, your main character or your second character, because this actually is a game that you can play cooperatively two-player. And it has different levels for the two-player mode. So it's a little bit bubble-bobble-like in that way.
If you have a friend.
Yeah, or it's a one-button control. You could do it yourself if you just really want to be the saddest person.
If you're a masochist.
Yes. If you're a masochist and extremely lonely, you can play this game two-player by yourself fairly conclusively. And I have proven this in every way. Anyway, so your character, you know, we'll stand there at the beginning of the stage, and as soon as you push the A button, or, you know, the button that is equivalent to A, because, you know, Joy-Cons, I found out that when explaining controls to other people who are playing Switch for the first time, I'll be like, you know, they'll have the Joy-Con, I'll be like, the A button, and they're like, that's not the A button. I was like, oh, yeah, the equivalent to the A button, which in your case would be the X button. Because they'll be looking at the face buttons and being like, which one's A?
I just have arrows.
Yeah, exactly. Mine just has arrows. Mine's broken. It's like, fine, I'm going to buy pro controllers for all of you. anyway, so as soon as you push the equivalent to the A button, your character will then turn into a globulous sort of cube that will persistently move in one direction. You know, like an auto runner, basically. So the only thing, you know, it'll stop when it hits a solid wall, and it will die if it hits a spike, of course. The things that you can do is that you can jump and double jump, and you can also wall jump. And in order to change the direction of your persistent movement, you have to wall jump. That's to say, jump onto a wall and then jump back off the wall. So in order to get through this game, it basically requires timed jumps that are forced by the persistent movement on top of spikes that are there that are, ever-present, and spikes that will move back and forth, and, you know, other timed traps as well. And often you'll also have to unlock doors that will change up the level to a degree. So there's lots and lots of moving challenges while your character is moving, and the goal of the game is basically just to catch all the little sparks of pink flame that are spread out throughout the level, and then once you get them all, you then get to the exit. A little bit like Ink in that way.
Yeah.
You know, you just gotta get to that exit. And like I said, you know, with two players, it's the same goal, but both players have to get to the end of the stage in order to move on. If one character gets there, they just float around the exit waiting for the other person. And yeah, once you do that, you get to the next stage and repeat 300 times, apparently. They say that this game has 300 stages. And in fact, since the stages are slightly different in two-player mode, I guess it's 150 stages each, or 300 total. I actually don't really know, because I didn't get all the way through the game.
There's a lot of stages to get through, though.
Exactly. And then there's also a hard mode that you can unlock only after you've beaten the game on normal mode, which makes me think that it's probably very hard, because the game's already pretty tough. And then on top of all that, you actually have the option that by default is on to have a timer present in every stage so that you can continuously try and get the best time and speedrun it, because that's the kind of person I think this game was maybe designed for.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So on top of that, you know, the rest of it is basically aesthetics. It's slightly a silhouette thing. That is to say, everything's kind of dark except for the background. There's very little detail in the enemies and stages. You know, spikes are spikes and platforms are platforms. Some of them have really cool things, like you can see the gears in some moving platforms, or like things that are rotating. But the game also features, and I didn't actually get to any of these, but the game features big boss monsters that you have to defeat as well. So that's an interesting one, too. I actually didn't get to see how that played out, but I got through many, many levels. I think I just stopped shy of one of the bosses.
Probably.
So yeah. So that's a this game has a lot to a lot to offer for the simplicity of its presentation.
Nice. So $10 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, $10 if you're looking for a challenge platformer or, you know, puzzle type platformer. This is definitely solid. I would say it's got a pretty good learning curve. That is to say, it doesn't start doing the thousands of deaths sort of thing like early on. I especially recommend this one for the two-player because the two-player does seem cool, and it's very rare to see a game like this actually feature cooperative multiplayer.
Yeah.
So I like it for that. I mean, I think the price is right, and I think it looks and sounds good. It's got that sort of ambient, sort of trippy soundtrack sort of thing going on for it, so that's kind of cool.
And I dug the visuals of it. It was a nice-looking game.
Yeah, I think it's a nice-looking game.
So, good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Wondershot, developed by Leaker Studio, published once again by Cubic Games. This one also releasing December 22nd on the Switch for $9.99. Hilariously intense multiplayer battle arena. You only have one ammo to defeat your opponent, miss your target, and you'll have to pick it back up or steal your enemies. Chris, tell us about Wondershot.
All right, Wondershot. Well, for one, I really hope that Leaker Studios, I didn't get to research them, but I hope that they're not native English speakers.
Why?
Because all the voiceovers in the game are this really goofy sort of weird accent, and I really, really like it. It's either somebody made up a ridiculous accent, or this is actually how these people talk, and I just don't know. So I just wanted to say that. Yeah, so Wondershot is basically, so I would say about 2/3 of this game is a multiplayer game. There is so much multiplayer in this game, but there is some stuff for single players, and I actually tried both. I'll leave it up to you to determine whether I tried it with actual friends or just me with the other controller.
With Wilfred.
Yeah, with Wilfred.
By the way, they're French.
Oh, they're French. Oh, good. Yes. They're very goofy French people. I love them. anyways, so yeah, the game basically there's different modes. There is the default mode is actually multiplayer, which is interesting. And but there is an adventure mode that I tried out first, and it's basically going stage by stage and like learning how to use each of the four weapons and how to basically hang with the mechanics of the game. So the stages are presented as arenas, you know, single screen arenas. I like to actually the look of it, and this may be weird, but it reminded me a lot of Adventures of Lolo.
Really?
In that it's like it's an action game, but you kind of had to solve puzzles and defeat all the enemies in order to get through. So, and some of the enemies are actually passive; they're just like balloons, and. But, you know, you're actually timed and you get a bonus if you can, you know, do everything without missing a shot. And the reason for this is because missing a shot is very consequential in this game because as the ad copy says, you only get one ammo. That is to say, if you're shooting a bow and arrow, you have one arrow. And if you shoot it and don't hit the target, then you have to go pick up your arrow before you can shoot it again. but yeah, it's like, it's, you know, top down and basically like each of the weapons functions in an interesting way. Like the arrow, basically you draw it back to shoot it. And if you shoot it immediately, it will go slowly, but it also seeks out the enemy. So it will curve to sort of try and catch the enemy, but it doesn't always work. And, you know, but it's at least something that, you know, it has some benefit to that. But when you draw it back, like, all the way and hold it for a second, then it will shoot very fast and, you know, all the way across the screen, which is good or bad, depending on what you're doing. Then there's, like, a hammer, which is the melee weapon, which is extremely useful. But if you swing it without hitting something, you drop it. But you can hold the button down for that, and it will actually sort of put a target out in front of you. And when you release the button, you'll swing your hammer and then also fly with the hammer into that direction. And it allows you to jump over walls and stuff that way. So a little bit like how Thor works.
Nice.
And then there's a boomerang, which you basically can throw it and it will come back to you, so you don't always have to run around and chase it. But sometimes it will hit something and stick, and then you still have to go get it. And, you know, that one, it basically has a thing where you can sort of get it to hold in place. And I'm not exactly sure. That one was a real challenge to get to work. And then there's a slingshot, which will bounce off walls, but it will only bounce off walls a couple of times. And if you hold it down, it will go faster, but will also be smaller. So, you know, it doesn't always hit the target quite so well. And then the lay of the land is an interesting thing, too, because you have enemies just running around and, you know, around obstacles and stuff, you know, Bomberman style, just try and get them before they get you. And then there's things like portal style, like teleportation portals that like float around the stages. So you can either shoot your weapon into them and then the weapon will come out the other side. And that's a way to, you know, defeat enemies. Or you can yourself run through the portal and appear on the other side, which is kind of cool. And, you know, there's actually some really cool puzzle levels in this game that exploit that. And I really quite enjoyed that because they were nice brain puzzles. So all this to say that, once you choose a multiplayer game, you can then have your up to four players battling it out on these battlegrounds using all of these like different things. And of course, you know, as it says, you can steal the enemy's weapon. So if the person like swings and misses and then drops their weapon, you can actually go grab it. Nice. It'll require you losing your current weapon, but you can at least, you know, trade off. And yeah, I think that's really cool. And on top of that, you can also go through the adventure mode or the endless mode, which is to say it just sends waves and waves of enemies upon you. And the benefit, always fun, yeah. You can do those cooperatively with other players, you know, up to the four. And that's really cool, too. And the benefit to that, really to all of the single-player stuff, is that you actually gain experience points and you gain levels. I'm not exactly sure what the levels do because, I mean, there's no way to get more powerful weapons or more life because one hit always kills you and you only ever have one weapon, like one individual shot. So I think that they just unlock bonus aspects to the different modes, because one thing that I noticed about the multiplayer modes, especially battle mode, they are so customizable. Like everything is customizable and you can do ridiculous stuff like... you can choose bonus aspects to the levels, including like making the walls like invisible. Basically, you can just run through walls, and you can either include that as a power up, or you can just turn it on permanently.
Nice.
Yeah, like every bonus thing that you can do in the game, you can also choose to turn on permanently, and it's like all kinds of ridiculous stuff. So this is the kind of game where if you're unlike me and you actually have friends that will play multiplayer couch games with you, this is a great one to like actually explore all these modes and like choose all these options. So I think this game is really exciting for the multiplayer potential, but it also has a really good single player campaign. I just think that it's, like I said, it's like 2/3 multiplayer, so definitely try and get this one if you have some friends.
Yeah. Well, overall, $10 on it. Thoughts?
Yeah, $10 sounds exactly perfect for this kind of game. And by the way, I'm actually a little bit lying because I went to a party on Saturday and actually got some people to play games with me on the Switch that I'd reviewed previously. We played Zarvot in multiplayer, and we also played Toast Time, and both those games are great in multiplayer as well.
Well, next thing you'll have to play Wondershot.
Exactly. Yeah, we will. I'm going to definitely try and get people to play this with me because it's a really fun, exciting game.
Awesome. Sounds like you had three winners.
Yeah, this is a good trilogy of Cubic games, I think. And, you know, it's kind of no wonder. They all have great ratings on Steam, which is two of them are only available on Steam as well as Switch. And then one of them is on PS4 as well. So... yeah, these
pretty
are
sure, pretty sure Wondershot's on Xbox as well, I believe.
Okay. Yeah,
if I remember correctly.
One. Yeah, I know Mana Spark's only on Steam and Switch, and that one, I definitely hope that one doesn't go to the wayside, because I think that's that's probably my favorite of the three, but it's also the one that's most like other games that I like to play. So
yeah, I was going to ask if you had a favorite out of the three of them.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be doing more, playing a lot more Mana Spark over the trip. I have like a 24-hour flight to Japan. So
oh, Christ,
tons of Switch time.
Make sure to bring a battery charger.
Yeah, I've got my charging cables and stuff, but yeah, I'll just have to see what I can do.
Bring some extra battery packs.
Yeah, good tip.
For that 24 hours, that is crazy.
Yeah, it is. Oh, well.
Send me a postcard.
Okay. Why these other countries got to be so far away, yo?
Seriously. But that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks as always for coming on and chatting.
Of course.
Thanks to Mira and Tanya at Other Tales Interactive for coming on and chatting about TikTok. That game is going to be awesome. You will have to check that out next year. Chris, you'll have to check it out as well because it's coming out for the Switch.
Hooray. Yeah, I think I saw something about it actually already.
It's a puzzle game that is required to have two players.
Well, we'll see if I get to play it then.
Well, you could probably play it with me because I'll have it on Steam or Switch, I believe. But right, cool. It requires you to talk to the other person because you have half the puzzle on your game and they have the other half of the puzzle in their game.
That's brilliant.
It's a really, really cool game. So I'm looking forward to that coming out next year.
Yeah, I love that.
You'll have to listen to the interview.
Okay, I will.
You'll have plenty of time.
I will have so much time. I'm sure they'll have Wi-Fi on the plane, so.
I would hope so at this day and age.
Right, it's an international flight. Well, it would be so silly if you didn't have Wi-Fi. Okay.
But yeah, again, that's it for this episode. We're going to play a couple of Christmas songs from our good friend Chris Huber. Do you have any final words to end the show?
I just like that it's Chris Christmas.
Christmas.
Christmas. Ha.
Gentile boys, the boss busted in, nearly scared him half to death. Had a rifle in his hands, cheap whiskey on his breath. From his beard to his boots, he was covered with ammo, like a big fat drunk disgruntled Yuletide Rambo. And he smiled out and said, with a twinkle in his eye, Merry Christmas to all, now you're all gonna die. The night Santa went crazy, the night Saint Nick went insane. Realized he'd been getting a raw deal, something finally must have stepped in his brain. Well, the workshop is gone now, he decided to bomb it. Everywhere you'll find pieces of Cupid and Comet. And he tied up his helpers, and he held the elves hostage. And he ground up poor Rudolph into reindeer sausage. He got Dancer and Prancer with an old German Luger. And he slashed up Dasher just like Freddy Krueger. And he picked up a flamethrower, and he barbecued Blitzen. And he took a big bite and said it tastes just like chicken. The night Santa went crazy, the night Kris Kringle went nuts. Now you can't hardly walk around the North Pole without stepping in reindeer guts. There's the National Guard and the FBI. There's a van from the eye with this news, and helicopters circling round in the sky. And the bullets are flying, the body counts rising, and everyone's dying to know. Oh, Santa, why? My. You used to be such a jolly guy. Yes, Virginia, now Santa Claus is dead. Some guy from the SWAT team blew a hole through his head. Yes, little friend, now that his brain's on the floor. I guess they won't have the fat guy to kick around anymore. But now there's no more presents for the children's enjoyment. And the elves have to wait in the line and file for unemployment. And they say Mrs. Claus, she's on the phone every night with a lawyer negotiating the movie rights. They're talking about the night Santa went crazy. The night St. Nicholas whipped, broke his back for some milk and cookies. Sounds to me like he was starting to get chipped. The night Santa went crazy. The night St. Nick went insane. Realized he'd been getting a raw deal. Something finally must have snapped in his brain.